Welcome to Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious. You're with me, Robin Kerner, the original Blue Republican. As always, it's great to have you with me. And today I'm going to be interviewing a gentleman that I actually interviewed when I started this little radio gig, the better part of a year ago. His name is Chad Peace. And if you go to the archives, you can find the interview I did with him when the sound wasn't as good and my technology wasn't working quite as well as I hope it will. Today, and we were discussing alternative voting systems and the top two system. Now, Chad Peace works for a few organizations, some of which I believe he founded. One being the Independent Voter Network and the other being End Partisanship. And these are both organizations that Blue Republican officially works with, officially endorses, and I'm proud that we do. So today I'm coming back to speak with Chad because a lot of his work is aimed very much at this question. Should elections serve parties or people? Because one thing that many, many Americans feel deeply in their gut is that our elections, indeed our political system, serves parties. You might say parties as a subset of all the special interests that our political system serves, but it definitely serves parties rather than people. And when you look at election coverage, and we've got a lot of election coverage now that, you know, in the aftermath of November the 4th and all of that, it's very clear that we're always talking about parties, and we're not even talking about all the parties. We're talking about pretty much the Republicans and the Democrats. And I know a lot of listeners to my show and millions of Americans believe that it is the mainstream Democrats and Republicans that have together brought us to the mess we're in. And, of course, one of the reasons for that is because these are effectively private organizations that, more than anything else, more than the principles that they espouse, they want to be able to control the people who run on their tickets and run under their banner, and they want to be able to control the messages that those people put out. So we're going to get into this in quite a concrete way, but also in kind of a big picture way, and discuss with Chad Peace some of the issues around this. Chad, welcome to the show again.
Thanks for having me again.
You bet. It's my pleasure. And, you know, just off the top of the show, thanks for everything you're doing. You do a lot of important work in a lot of places, and you aren't just a talker or a writer, which I'm largely guilty of. I do a lot of talking and writing, but obviously I'm always talking about the need to act and get off high horses. And you really are an activist. You're an activist who acts. And specifically, recently, you've been involved in a very interesting lawsuit, which speaks to some of the bigger issues that I mentioned in the intro here. And this is a lawsuit that's going on in New Jersey. Now, we're going to talk about some of the bigger issues, but let's just start by focusing on what this lawsuit is, because I think it's a good way into what we want to discuss.
Well, I think the New Jersey lawsuit's really a component of a larger national strategy, and you mentioned it in your introduction. At its core, the lawsuit is intended to really ask the court the question for the first time: do our elections serve people, or do they serve political parties? We brought it in New Jersey based on three factors: legal factors, factual factors, and political factors. This lawsuit could have just as easily been brought in a number of other states. And really, I'll get to where it's at on appeal right now, really highlights exactly where, you know, we wanted the lawsuit to go. But some preliminary facts that led us to pick New Jersey. Most people.
Well, hold on. First of all, what is the lawsuit claiming? What is it trying to do? Let's start there so that everyone's on the same page here.
All right. So I'll start with the three kind of principles of the lawsuit. The first principle is that the right to vote is fundamental. We get our right to vote as citizens, not by anything else. So that leads to the second principle, is that the right to vote cannot be conditioned on joining any organization like a political party, right? Those are private organizations. And the third is that taxpayer funds should not be expended for the private purpose of any political party, which means that if the taxpayers are going to fund an election system, it should serve all the voters, and a state doesn't have the right to exclude voters just because they're not part of one of the two major parties. So similar lawsuits have been filed in the past but they're always asked the question such as, do independent voters have the right to participate in the Republican or Democrat primaries? Or do the Libertarian candidates have the right to be on the ballot in the primary election, right? Those questions have been asked to the court, but those questions always presuppose something that's fundamentally different with our lawsuit. It presupposes that parties are entitled to special access to the process in the first place. So where our lawsuit is different, it's brought by unaffiliated voters as well. We have Republicans and Democratic plaintiffs on the lawsuit. And what we ask is not whether that voters have the right to participate in the private part of the primary election, which is selecting a party nominee, right? What we're saying is, does the state have an obligation to provide an apparatus for every voter to participate equally? So we're not saying that, okay, the Democrats have to open up their primary or the Republicans have to open up their primary, but we're saying, what's the state's obligation, right? And a lot of people ask, well, what's your solution? Well, the solution really is not one that should be implemented through the court system or by the plaintiffs, because there's lots of solutions. There's, you know, the top two primary in California made a nonpartisan based system, which means that the primary system has a public purpose. It's not to elect party nominees. All candidates, all voters, one ballot, right? But that's not the only solution, and there's lots of people who have legitimate concerns about top two, because myself nor the proponents, the people who wrote top two, think it's perfect. We have instant runoff, approval voting, all kinds of stuff. What we're saying is that the legislature needs to think about voters and craft a system that includes all voters. And that could be done. Think about this. What stops the state from holding an other primary? Why can't the Republicans run their primary, the Democrats have theirs, and let all the third parties and independents and all the other voters who aren't affiliated at least have an outlet that they can express their preference for a candidate regardless of party? Now, but when you put it in context of the facts, it becomes even more compelling. 47% of New Jersey voters are unaffiliated with a party. That means that there's way more voters that are not affiliated with the Republican or Democrat party than are affiliated with either one of them individually. It also means that those 47% of voters have spent $12 million to conduct a primary election that they are precluded by law from participating in.
And I think this is critical, right? This is because this is concrete and you can't argue with it. This is public money commandeered for private purposes.
Right. Not only is it commandeered for private purposes, right? The Democratic Party in some states, the Republican Party in other states, hire their attorneys to go into court for those states that have open primaries, and they're so private, they're going into court and they're winning, saying that the state cannot open up these primaries because it violates their First Amendment right of association. Which brings us back to our lawsuit. We're not challenging that. In fact, we embrace that and we accept it. It's absolutely right. Parties have a First Amendment right of association.
Mm-hmm.
And the court has ruled that a state cannot overcome that First Amendment right by creating open primaries. So what we're saying in our lawsuit is you have two rights that are conflicting. First, you have a fundamental right of voters that's innate with citizenship. You're a citizen, you get the right to vote. The second right is the First Amendment right of political parties, which is and their right to have their private primary is a derivative right. It only exists insofar as the state has created a process for their private benefit, right? We're not saying that that derivative right or that right to conduct a private Republican or Democrat primary shouldn't exist. What we're saying is that you can't create those rights to the complete exclusion and expense of people who are not parts of that private organization. So one thing we always emphasize, whether it's in our lawsuit or it's in the news operation that we run, we're not anti-party. In fact, we always say we embrace the rights of parties. The only thing we're saying is we have to also respect the rights of voters as individuals to participate. And ironically, we think that in the long run, that will actually make parties stronger, because as you see now, more and more people are dissatisfied with both parties. They're leaving both parties.
Yeah.
Since California adopted a nonpartisan primary, 68% of voters since the adoption that have registered, 68% have registered as unaffiliated.
Okay, this is a great place. We're going into the break. We'll be back soon, Jeff. I can definitely tell that my guest, Chad Peace, has said this a few times to numerous audiences, and I'm very glad he's explaining this to the Blue Republican audience right now. So, Chad, just briefly in the break there, we discussed one statistic that really puts this in perspective. There is a reason why this is so important. This is not some kind of academic or abstract discussion or point about, you know, some obscure right. I'll let you tell the listeners the magnitude of the effect that this issue has. Why are we focusing so much on primaries?
Right. Well, primaries have really been the process that's insulated both the major parties from competition, right? A lot of people will say, well, everybody gets to vote in the general election. Well, therefore, you have a choice. Well, I always give the analogy. Well, if you have 10 people that want to go out to dinner and everybody says we can choose wherever we want to go, and only two people decide the options, right? So two people say, let's either go to Burger King or McDonald's. And then everybody else gets to say, okay, you can choose wherever you want to go, as long as you choose Burger King or McDonald's. Well, that's not really a choice. So what's happened here is, take New Jersey, for example. You have a 9% turnout in the primary election. So
So we're talking 9% is the sum of the primaries of the Democratic turnout plus the Republican.
The sum,
right? Yeah.
Exactly, the sum, yeah. Right? So round up to 10 and divide by 2. That means there's 5% in each election. Now combine that with gerrymandering, or just the fact that some areas tend to be more Democrat or more Republican than others. So even if there's nothing nefarious going on, right, just – districts tend to be Republican or Democrat. In New Jersey, there was one statewide election in the entire state that was decided by less than 15% of the vote.
In the general election.
So the general election. That means the only real meaningful election occurred in the primary.
Right. This is the critical piece. This is the critical piece, that if you are excluded from the primaries, then you are actually excluded from the only bit of the democratic process that in more than 90% of cases has any power to change the representation.
Right. In the last 120 years, no third party has qualified for ballot access in New Jersey, and not a single representative who didn't first win a primary election has made any office in the state, Congress, Senate, anything. None. That means you have to win the Republican or Democratic primary in order to get elected. So if you go back to the numbers, say it's an even split, 50-50. Well, that means in a Republican district, that 5% of the electorate has the 100% of the power to decide who's going to represent the district. The fact that you get a symbolic vote in the general election means nothing. And so what our lawsuit asserts, right, and we filed – so the readers understand. Our lawsuit was already filed in federal court. The judge in federal court agreed with the attorney general, who herself is a member of the Republican Party, who argued that the state has the right to qualify who has a – fundamental right to vote during the primary election. Now, there's a couple for the legal nerds like me out there. There's a couple cases that, you know, we really hinge our case on. First, there's a case called Yik Wo, which says that right to vote is fundamental and it's the most important right because it's the right that secures all others. In other words, if we don't have the right to vote, how do we ever protect the rest of our rights? And so that's going to our argument. How do you qualify or condition a fundamental right that is the most important of all rights by saying in order to enjoy that fundamental right, you have to join a private political party? The second case that folks should really understand is a case called U.S. v. Classic, which says that when the state makes an election, a part of an election, an important or integral stage of the election, the fundamental right to a vote that applies in the general equally applies to the primary, right? So the state basically can't do an end around the equal protection clause by creating a process that's doesn't, you know, where the fundamental right to a vote doesn't attach. Now, I could go on and on for days for different cases, but the point we're making is most often the coverage of the of elections and the equal protection clause is always viewed in light of the general election. But all you have to do is watch CNN, Fox, MSNBC for 5 seconds and look at their blue and red maps to really understand why the real election process occurs in the primaries. If the Republicans and the Democrats hadn't claimed ownership of all these districts all around the country, those maps would not be pre-filled in red and blue with little tiny blotches of purple in the few competitive districts that remain, right? And as long as we have non-competitive elections, we have the parties that get to control the candidates. And it goes back to what you were talking about earlier, Robin, is, you know, should elections be about people or parties? What it comes down to is accountability. If the most important part of the process is winning the party primary, and that primary is conducted for the sole purpose of electing somebody to represent the party, well, what happens when you have a representative who wants to take on an issue that the party is not in lockstep agreement with? Right. When they take on that issue, it's not the other party or the constituents that end up removing their opportunity to win the next election. It's their own party. Right. And we see that with, you know, there's the, you know, the most obvious example to your listenership are guys like Ron Paul and Rand Paul and folks that, you know, where are the anti-war activists now? Where are the anti-war representatives? Where are the privacy advocates, right? Studies have shown like 70 or 80% of voters are ready for some real meaningful privacy legislation. Well, then why has not one representative made that a big issue? Because and their own party will bury them in the primary if they make it an issue.
Yeah, and one thing that it has been clear from, you know, communicating with the candidates that friends of mine or the Blue Republican has supported, etc., is that within the party frameworks, the ultimate goal of the party is not any one of their stated principles or policies. It is always control of the candidate running. It is always control.
Right, in which people have to distinguish. One thing we try to emphasize is within those parties, there's lots of great people. Right. And I've been given some lectures at high schools and colleges, and I to relate to them, I say, you know, as a common phrase that people understand is, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game. Right. Well, the rules of the game are set up so that you have to be a party, you know, teetotaler in order to win. But that doesn't mean that there aren't good Republicans and there aren't good Democrats and from all the parties who really want to do good. The whole point of our lawsuit isn't saying let's get rid of parties completely or all Republicans and all Democrats are bad. What we're saying is how can you really be a truly authentic leader, somebody who really wants to do what they believe is right, if they're always answerable to what the party leadership wants at the end of the day.
And just to be clear, I'm just going to reword this a bit as well. The point being here that if what you want to do for the good of the nation and your constituents is not representative of the will of the party, even though it's representative of the will of the constituents, which is what you're supposed to do, represent the constituents, you cannot do it. You're systematically prevented from doing the thing that you're there to do, which is to represent your district when it conflicts with the party. So really, this is pretty deep, because this is a conflict that is at the level of principle here. This is pragmatics and principle.
Right. No, yeah. It absolutely is. And what we're suggesting, like I said, is not a particular change to primary elections or the election process in particular. All we're saying is that the election process, at the end of the day, the accountability needs to be maintained by the people. It's the people that hold representatives accountable, and that they should be answered to, not their party. And so the party should function within the constraints of them having to also be accountable to the people.
Okay. No, thank you, Chad. We're going into the next break. We'll carry on when we get back. So here we are on Blue Republican Radio doing some kind of meta politics, I think we could call it. So, Chad, give us a clue here. What's the status, if you can speak to this, of the lawsuit right now? Are there any clues as to how this might go, the one in New Jersey?
In terms of how it might go, I mean, we're obviously going up on a huge hurdle. We're happy where the issues have been presented, but it's really tough just because, you know, we're going up against an institution that's been built by these two parties. The issue, we just filed our appeal in the Third Circuit on Monday, so the state has 30 days to answer. We have about four organizations that have filed amicus briefs on our behalf, so briefs in support of our position, including Fair Vote. And what the issue that's really important that's up for appeal is the issue that a state can qualify who has a fundamental right to vote during a primary election. And the lower court has said that, you know, New Jersey's system that excludes almost half of their voters is okay because they've set up a qualification procedure. And that qualification procedure says, well, just join the Republican or Democratic Party and you can participate. So that goes to really our idea on appeal is that our right to vote derives from citizenship, not by joining a private organization.
It seems a fundamentally and obviously abusive position. I mean, abusive with respect to the whole point of democracy and representation. So how is that even credible? I mean, I'm not a legal expert, but I understand stuff. I know what a principle is when it hits me in the face. Well, how's this even got any legs?
Well, I mean, it was articulated in the Attorney General's brief, and I think I don't agree with it, but I'm, for purposes of playing my own devil's advocate, I think that a lot of it, the people truly believe that that this type of system is required to maintain a two-party system which is how they distinguish America's democracy from a lot of others.
Right, but hold on a second, Chad. Let me just, sorry to interrupt, but nobody surely is making a legal principle or argument based on the need to maintain a two-party system, right? I mean, that's not at all.
Well, in the Attorney General's brief in response to our submission in the federal court, they made an argument or a suggestion to the judge that accepting the plaintiff's argument would, in effect, get rid of the partisan-based system that has made America what it is today. That was actually an argument presented by the Attorney General and agreed with by the judge. As I mentioned before in the show, if you really understood our lawsuit, we're not even suggesting that you have to get rid of the partisan nature of the election. As I said, you could have a partisan-based system. And what that means, when I say partisan-based, that means that you have a first round of the system where the purpose is to elect a party nominee, and the nominee on behalf of the party goes on to the general election. You can have nonpartisan systems like Washington and California have, where there's never that part of the election, right? It's called a nonpartisan election, where your party affiliation doesn't matter. The rules are the same, the qualifications are the same. So what we're suggesting is you could have a partisan system, but you can only have a partisan system insofar as everybody can participate. And historically, you know, the irony in the argument from the Attorney General is that, for example, primaries were brought into the state election system at the turn of the 1900s. And it was the beginning of the 1900s is when states took primary elections out of the private sphere and put them into the state process because the nominees were being elected by those few insiders, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the states brought in the elections into the state system, funded them, administered them, for the sole purpose of having voters matter more, right? And this comes at a time when almost 100% of voters were registered either Democrats or Republican, right?
Mm.
So skip forward almost more than 100 years, right? Well, some practical considerations that are directly related is, well, now in like in New Jersey, for example, 47% aren't affiliated with the Republican and Democrats. Only 9% are turning out. So are those primaries serving the same public purpose that they were 120 years ago when they were first implemented, right? Now, some other things we also have to think about is, are the roles of political parties the same as they were in 1900? I mean, in 1900, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have a bunch of other organizations that could communicate as rapidly as political parties. And so while political parties have an integral role today, is it different than they were before? Because when at that time, political parties were the vehicle for change, right? And nobody can deny that both the Republican and the Democratic parties can be credited with very significant and positive changes in our history. I mean, without the Republican Party, we wouldn't have gotten rid of slavery when we did. Without the Democratic Party, we wouldn't have gotten women the right to vote, right? They serve as valuable vehicles. But the question we're asking the court is, under the conditions of today, are the primary elections and the election process as a whole serving the purpose of that they should? In short, are they serving the purpose of forcing the state, the representatives, and political parties themselves to be responsible and responsive to all voters, so that they are acting in the most positive capacity as vehicles for change?
Right, but just to be absolutely clear, you're not even requiring that the parties in any way represent all voters. You're just requiring that that those who are elected to represent the voters can indeed represent the voters as a priority over their representation of the views of those of the party to which they belong.
Right. There's not one thing in our lawsuit suggests that parties should get rid of parties, that parties shouldn't serve as a vehicle, that they shouldn't still have partisan offices. All we're saying is that the election process should provide an equal playing field. And our argument is that today we've basically created a football field, and there's two teams on that field. There's the Republicans and the Democrats, and the state is the referee.
Mm-hmm.
There's less and less fans are even coming to the stadium to watch the game because they don't like where this election sport has taken them. When another team tries to get on the field, the referee says, get off. The rules say you can't participate, right? All we're saying is that we shouldn't look at elections like a game between two teams.
Absolutely.
The referee, his obligation is not to the teams on the field. His obligation is to anybody who wants to participate in that stadium, and that the rules ought to be constructed with them in mind, the voters, not the parties.
Yeah.
But the parties are able to compete insofar as everybody else has already been given the opportunity to participate equally.
So this is, I mean, this is clear. So let's, you know, let's imagine a wonderful hypothetical world in which you win. What are some of your ideas as to what could then be implemented in the states to comply with your win?
Right. Well, I mean, I don't want to speculate on outcome, obviously.
No, I don't. I don't mean you to. Yeah.
A big hurdle, but you know, in a theoretical world where you know at least we think that elections are conducted with voters in mind and we have an equal right to vote, there's a number of different options that have presented. One I mentioned earlier was simply, okay, have the qualified parties have their own private primary and then let everybody else who doesn't qualify participate in a separate or other primary, right? That would maintain a partisan nature, but it'd give everybody else an opportunity. You know, other people have suggested, well, just get rid of the primary altogether and go to a ranked choice voting in the general election. Why do we even need a primary election? Other folks have suggested remedies like approval voting. For those who are not familiar, approval voting is a system where you can vote for as many candidates as you want. So the winner could get theoretically get 99% of the vote, and the second place could get 98% of the vote. But you, and the idea behind approval voting is that you get candidates that are more agreeable rather than disagreeable with people, because voters don't have to choose one over another. There's other systems like instant runoff voting. You know, FairVote's been a big advocate of instant runoff voting. There's proportional representation that's practiced in a lot of other countries.
Okay, now let me stop you right there because I agree with everything you're doing. And because I agree with everything you're doing, I am absolutely against proportional representation. Proportional representation is in spirit and in practice the opposite of moving power to people. It is moving power to the parties because it requires people to vote for a party and then the party goes down its list, you know, and picks. You know, the party has full control of who it chooses to represent the people. So you actually can't even vote directly for your representative in a proportional representation system. I actually had this conversation with Chris Novoselic, who's, you know, obviously the chairman of FairVote, and he's been for proportional representation. And I made this case to him, and he'd never heard it. And his head kind of exploded and said, I've got to go away and think about that. But now, you've just mentioned it, so I'm picking myself off the seat. Am I missing something?
I have to qualify this, but I absolutely love your reaction to that, because your question to me was, what are some things that suggested, right? The idea, the purpose of the lawsuit was to catalyze the discussion, right?
Okay.
And okay, so I think any solution that's presented needs to be offered, and it needs to be argued that it fits the principles of the equal vote, right?
Right.
I have never been an advocate, but it's been suggested by a lot of people as an alternative. I haven't really gone through. I agree with you. I think that it, you know, it does put the party at the penultimate.
Oh yeah.
Apex of the power and reduces individual voters, right? I have never gone into a deep constitutional analysis of whether there can be a rational argument made by how, you know, how that it could be constitutional even under the principles that we've offered. But what I'm suggesting is that with this lawsuit, there's an obvious injustice being done in New Jersey and a whole lot of other states.
Mm.
And what we need to do, and what's not being done by any of the mainstream outlets or really most of the people who are the beneficiaries of the current system, is saying, wait a second, let's step back. We all complain about partisanship. We're all complaining about a Congress that has an 8% approval rating. We're all complaining about stalemate. Instead of pointing fingers at saying, oh, it's Obama's fault, or it's Boehner's fault, or it's Reid's fault, or it's any of the players, the people within the system, not very few people are stepping back and say, can we just have an honest discussion about the election system in the first place? Because it's the election system that really governs how you can lead at the end of the day. Unless you absolutely have no intention of getting reelected, and in that case, your time frame for being able to accomplish anything is really short. you have to govern in a way that will give you an opportunity to be reelected again. So our argument is that the fundamentally most important thing we can do to solve any of the ills going on, no matter what our position is on any of them individually, is to really understand how the election system has created each and every problem that exists today when it as it relates to an inability to act.
Now, lawsuits are a bit of a minority sport, so to speak. Are there any ways that we can get this message out? I mean, this is just so not mainstream, and yet it is, as you rightly say, it's fundamental to the mess that we're in. It's just utterly fundamental. How do we get people who aren't interested in the niceties of, kind of the political system, able to realize that this is affecting every aspect of their lives, that this is a mainstream issue?
Right. Well, I mean, the most simple thing, if you go to endpartisanship.org, there's a petition to sign your name to. Every couple months or so, we have a bumper sticker campaign. We'll send out bumper stickers. You can put it on your car. Those are things that are really easy. For those that want to get involved, whether you're an individual or an organization, we're in the process of setting up, more of an outreach campaign. But as individuals and organizations, is explain this to your family. Mm. Go to your organizations and say, here's what's going on. Send us a message if you want to join our growing coalition, like the Blue Republican is a member of.
Yep.
Join the coalition. Get involved. I think the number one thing you can do is really simple, is talk about it. When people say that they're upset with the system, say, hey, maybe you're not upset with that one person. Maybe it's the system that's creating this. And, it is going to be a slow process because, the media, the politicians, everybody has organized themselves around a two-sided debate. Mm-hmm. And it's not because they're bad people or they're nefarious. It's just everybody's accepted that this is the way it is. Mm. There's two sides to every story. And if you don't fit in within those two sides, it must not be important, or it must not be a legitimate issue because we're not talking about it. So the best thing we can do is say, look, there are other answers. Just because I don't agree with that person on this issue doesn't mean I can't agree with them on this issue or in particular or in general. Why we can't agree that the election system itself needs to be changed. So, I know that was a long answer to your short question, but I think just becoming aware, talking about it, and then send us a message if you want to get more involved.
Yeah, and also I would just say, because it's related, Blue Republican is also a sponsor of OpenDebates2016.com. That's in the spirit of this, putting ideas out in the mainstream that aren't Republican or Democrat by getting presidential debates with, at the very least, all presidential candidates, nominees, who have a theoretical chance of actually winning the presidency. Because it's not just keeping out candidates, it's also about keeping out ideas that aren't Republican. We are going into the break now. We will be back for the final segment shortly. Now, another important issue that relates to maintaining duopolistic partisan control and making sure that the people are not properly represented, that they don't have the power to change their representation. A big issue that also affects that is gerrymandering. And we've only got a couple of minutes in this final segment, but, Chad is kind of the man for this stuff, and I wonder if he can just say something about that in the last 2 minutes of the show. Chad.
Well, on our news network, Independent Voter Network, IVN.us, we actually did a study and showed, and we came up with that 35 of 435 elections were competitive. And the reason for that was because gerrymandering made Republicans either districts either Republican or Democrat, that the general election really wasn't competitive. So gerrymandering is a consequence of a system that makes elections about parties, because what the Republicans and Democrats who are in office already are incentivized to do is to say, well, I don't want to have to run a competitive election, so how about we change the districts? I'll make mine, if I'm the Democrat, I'll make my district more Democratic, right? So that way when I win my primary, I don't have to face a general election. And then we'll give you more Republicans in your district. And I think I always say, you know, for all this talk about bipartisanship, gerrymandering is the ultimate, you know, bipartisan venture, right?
Yeah.
So bipartisanship doesn't always mean that it's good, right? But gerrymandering is only the consequence of a system that presupposes that parties ought to represent people and not, or parties ought to represent people and not having representatives represent people. So gerrymandering is a huge issue. It's a consequence of, you know, years and years of redrawing districts so that the election de facto becomes important only at the primary stage. I think that if we change the way we think about elections, and if we have our lawsuit is successful and makes them about people, the issue of gerrymandering becomes less and less important.
Okay, that's very interesting. I think I need to definitely do a show on gerrymandering because I find it fascinating and it has so much power over our representation. Chad, thanks so much for your time and expertise as always, and thank you for being with me on Blue Republican Radio.
Thanks for having me.